Hey, welcome to the Eve edition of The Unpresentable Parts. Hosts Samantha Neptune and Jasmine Cherry kickstart the dialogue where silence ends. Every episode dives into the experiences that define us as women, celebrating our diversity, depth, and dynamism. With Samantha and Jasmine, your voice matters. Ready to be a part of the conversation? Let's get started.
Welcome to Unpresentable Parts, where we aim to make the unpresentable presentable. This is the Eve edition. My name is Samantha Neptune.
Hey, and I'm Jasmine Cherry.
Fantastic. There was a slight delay there. Jasmine was paying attention, though. Don't worry about it. We're all here together. And so we are so super excited to join you guys today and continue our three-part series where we are talking about just three different women and their resilience, how we can connect with them, their strength in their relationship with God, ultimately, and how it relates to them. So today, last time we did Hagar. And so today we are going to continue our time with Tamar. And I am not sure if you guys are familiar with Tamar, but before we jump in, I think let's go to our regular practice where we share about maybe something that we feel is unpresentable coming in today. So Jasmine, did you want to start or do you want me to?
You go ahead. I need to think about this one a little bit longer.
I felt like I delayed because I think for me right now, I just turned 50. Woohoo! I am so excited about that. I turned 50 on Monday. And I don't know if there's something unpresentable as much as learning how in a society, when I say my age now, I get these weird looks like, wait, what? No. You know, and so learning to be comfortable. I feel very comfortable in my 50, but now I've got to feel comfortable enough not to have to prove to people I'm 50. And it's interesting because first people see, in a lot of ways, I look younger than 50. I do. I'm aware of that. So I think I'm in the space of watching people recognize my age. And that's a very interesting thing. The shift in how they talk to you. So I don't know if that's unpresentable or whatever, but that's kind of where I'm at. It's interesting watching that shift.
You know what? I feel like 50 is like the new 40, and 50, what it looks like today, definitely looks a lot different than what it looked like 20 years ago, 50 years ago. And I think when people thought about 50, you think old grandma and all that. But I think as people are living longer and are more aware of the food they're putting in their bodies, they're taking care of themselves better, as it should be. So I do feel like, you know, but I think that old mentality can still kick in, like, oh, you're 50, you know, like, what? And then, so I can only imagine how that feels. I don't know, man, the black don't crack. So it's just something, I don't, maybe it's just the melanin, you know, it just, it does what it does. It's very true. But yes, well, you've always looked amazing, Sam, but happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
And yes, that's awesome. Like, my birthday is next month, so I'm excited for that. So for me, unpresentable, you know, I feel like it's been a pretty good week so far. I know one thing I've been trying to work on is how to put in bids to my husband and even to Avery, but I know by default sometimes kids can kind of already get that extra attention, but certain things that maybe I used to be good at that I'm not as good at anymore. For example, the physical touch, I feel like that kind of went down for me. So trying to figure out, okay, is what my husband needs, what do I need, all of that. And so just trying to give them in like more bids in that way and not view it as like, you know. Even I had to catch myself this morning, even when I was just rubbing his back as he was talking. He loves little touches like that. I think to myself like, because it's a deliberate move. And it's interesting how that used to be a bit more natural for me. So I definitely think it shifted after having Avery. I don't know what that was about, but it definitely shifted for me there. I'm like, all right. And I can even notice change in him and how he's been responding and how he, why didn't I work on this sooner? Or how come I know stay consistent in doing stuff like that? And, you know, because I appreciate it and that effort is for me. So I guess maybe that's my unpresentable that has turned presentable. And it's really encouraging to see him encouraged and to know that's something that he liked, although it's ever so subtle, but it still makes a difference.
Great. It's always good to see growth. And I think when we're able to look at our unpresentable parts and kind of like look in that mirror, like the scripture says, if you look in the mirror and walk away and don't change anything, you know, that's not good. So we do want to see what we see and then able to adjust, right? And so thanks for sharing that, Jasmine. So today we are going to jump in with Tamar, and the episode theme is Tamar, Resilience and Strength. And this is an interesting story. You know, the story of Tamar, when you read the Bible, you can really skip over that one quite easily. It's in Genesis 38. There's one chapter inserted into the story of Joseph's journey, right? There's a whole story about Joseph in this Genesis 38. And the story of Tamar and Judah is like right there. And it's really a brief narrative about Joseph's brother Judah and his family. And so for the sake of our Eve podcast, we're going to highlight this chapter focusing on Tamar. And she really is a woman determined, absolutely determined to right a wrong that is that's been done against her. And she does it in a very unconventional way. By the way, she achieves this, and this is a PG. This is not a PG text. There are sexual acts, betrayal, deception. And honestly, I don't really think I've ever heard someone do a lesson on Tamar. It's not something you take to focus
on. It sounds like a good TV show.
It would. It's messy. it is, girl. It'd be, woo, it's got everything in there. And it's messy. And I think difficult to explain sometimes. We can't tie it up in a neat bow. And so I think we kind of stay away from that. But I think this small chapter is a reminder that women in the Bible, from Old to New Testament, were not passive. They weren't passive observers. I think they really contributed to changing the course of the biblical history, which is what Tamar did. In her strength and her resilience, she took great risks putting her life on the line. But the thing I love about this story with Tamar is she did it all within the law of Moses. She did not step outside the law of Moses in the risk she took in the, it was unconventional. It was unconventional. Don't get me wrong. But she was holding to the law. And it's very interesting to see how God allows this in the Bible.
Right.
I think in a lot of ways, as we introduce this theme, for me, a Black woman in America, I just think Tamar's story reminds me I'm not a victim. I'm not a victim and that my destiny is in my hands. Because she made herself seen. Where God, when we talked about Hagar, you know, she felt seen by God. And she called him El Roy. Right. You know, you are the God who sees me. Tamar, on the other hand, she had to make herself be seen. And she disrupted the narrative. And in that way, she really changed history. So I really love the story of Tamar. And I look forward to kind of fleshing it out with you. So
yeah. Absolutely. Can I just add that I love that you say Tamar, or excuse me, I know Tamar, all of it, it's all in there. But just that whole victim mentality, and it is, I feel like it's that fine line, because when you are a victim, you know, if something has been done wrong to you, that is very truthful, right? That's a fact. And then it's then how do you then live your life after that incident, after those acts or what have you, so you're not continuing to live a life, I guess, of victimhood, how do you turn that around to impact your life? So I love how you say that. And then we can see Tamar and what did she decide to do in her situation?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think considering the situation she was in, she had the culture, she was in a cultural space where really she was property. She wasn't, there wasn't this huge value in women. So there were many things counting against her. And I think that is the thing that helps me to be so moved by this story, is because she, despite the cultural limitations, she didn't allow it mm-hmm. to keep her from having what was rightfully hers. That is so difficult, because it could be so easy to be like, I can't because, you know, this person won't let me, or this system won't let me, or I don't have, you know, you fear being ostracized. And really, you fear taking the risk that could put your, kind of, you can lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for her, she said, I don't care if I lose everything, I am owed this. And I just really appreciate that. I think it helps me to really realize how much we do need to explore the Bible more. And it really helps us to see even how it connects to today, how it helps our faith today, that biblical narratives really do help us navigate the contemporary issues we face today. It hasn't,
right.
It's not null and void. It works. The principles transition, you know, the principles yeah. do transition. And I really, again, I'm grateful for those stories from Hagar to Tamar or Tamar or whichever way we say it, potato, potato. But I'm incredibly moved by the steps she took, in that what she did then relates to me as a woman now. Where am I mm-hmm. unwilling to lose something by speaking up, by fighting okay. for what is mine, what I know is mm-hmm. mine, and not in this, you know, prideful kind of like at all risk, at whatever the cost. It is, no, this mm-hmm. is just, this is a right. This is humanity. This is just yeah. my humanity, my future, my well-being. You know, we don't tend to talk about mental health, right? And when we mm-hmm. talk about the Bible, we tend to just focus on the spiritual things. But I think of this woman in the situation she's in, which I'll, you know, let me give a brief summary of that so that those listening who don't know the story will understand that a bit more. Tamar marries Judah's eldest son. Judah is her father-in-law. She marries his eldest son, who dies because of his wickedness. I don't know what that was. It doesn't necessarily tell us. And then so she gets the second son, Judah's second son, Onan, is then instructed to marry Tamar. And then he's supposed to produce an heir that will inherit his eldest brother's inheritance. But he dies also because of his disobedience. So now the father-in-law promises her his youngest son, Shayla. So he promises her the younger son when he grows up. But he fails to fulfill this promise. So in response, Tamar disguises herself as a prostitute, woo, seduces Judah, mm-hmm. gets pregnant. And then when he learns about Tamar's pregnancy, he initially condemns her, but then realizes, I'm the daddy. Then he acknowledges her righteousness and his own failure to uphold the law of Moses and his duty to her. There was a Levirate law that you were supposed to, it was that whole thing about ensuring that the widow had a son, had a child. And he was not sticking to that. That's kind of the same thing. If you know the story of Ruth, that's what Boaz did for Ruth. So Tamar's actions, the way she went about this, it actually secured her place and lineage within Judah's family. And who came from the line of Judah? Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
This woman is in the lineage of Christ. Okay, how she got there, it's a little bit crazy and messy and all of those things. But I think, wow, she had more righteousness than her father-in-law. She knew the law and she was owed this. And this is what was supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's almost weird to hear righteousness and then prostitution, sleeping, you know, disguising yourself to seduce your father-in-law so you can get your rights. You know, I just appreciate God putting it in the Bible. Because he really did neglect, he neglected Tamar after the death of his son.
Yeah.
He didn't do what he was supposed to do. Any thoughts about that, Jazz?
Well, one of the first thoughts, I was like, we don't know what the eldest son did that was so evil. But what the second son did, let me tell the people, he didn't follow, I guess, all the way through to make sure a child was conceived. If you know what I mean, wink, wink. So, but I think, so just even some thoughts on just maybe from obviously not a male perspective, because I'm not a male, but I can understand if maybe he thought, what's going on with Tamar? How come these things are happening to my son? And it can be easy to maybe want to point the finger instead of like looking at your sons themselves. It says your first son was evil. Your second son was disobedient, you know? And so, I mean, if this third son is right, then you shouldn't have any fear that of anything, in case that's why he was waiting so long and not, or just not necessarily wait. He just didn't want to, right? So that's why it was taking so long. This third son was of age, was ready to go ahead and do that and to have a child, but not wanting to. So I'm wondering if the dad would just, fearful of like what's going on with Tamar, that every time my son is with her, they drop dead, you know. Yeah, what other reason? Right, like something's going on here that's suspicious or funky. Again, we don't know because it doesn't just outright say, but I think it's, I don't know, just very telling to make sure you look at your own sons and not so easy to want to blame a woman or to blame this woman who's, hey, it's not my fault. Here, not doing what they need to do in the eyes of the Lord, and this is their consequence. But definitely reading it for sure through, and when you don't understand the culture and understand like the law and all those things, it definitely does seem wild. It reads wild. You're like, what is going on? Oh, how, I guess because of her face was covered, I'm like, how could you not tell that maybe that was her? But maybe, again, if you're only seeing the eyes, or I'm not sure how covered she was, so you're not able to see the woman, right? And they're not seeing your body anyway. But it's like, wow. But that took a lot of just faith in action, you know? It could have been easy for her to just accept, like, okay, I guess I'll keep waiting, and maybe the opportunity will come or not. But knowing how she still obeyed God, right? This was still, you're still able to do this. She's not breaking anything, but for her to not just, I don't know, just kind of keep waiting and just say, okay, let me go ahead and take this initiative and move that way. It still can sound wild, even as I'm saying it, you know. Obviously times are different, things are different. That's why it can seem so bizarre, but it's not. And it was probably appropriate and showed a lot of her faith. And like what you said, this is old to me. So I'll quit talking now. But it was just, it is so much to take in. And she was definitely very brave. I'm like, I don't know if I have the guts to do that.
Yeah, brave. I love that. Because, you know, something sticks out for me when I was reading this that I had never noticed before. The reason why he didn't know it was her is because her face was covered. And he assumed her to be a prostitute because her face was covered. That's a bit crazy to me, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna tell you where I'm going with this. So here that means normally their faces weren't covered.
Okay.
Which is interesting to me, because when you look at our current culture, how the women of Middle East dress, there is that face covering.
Right.
So this is interesting to me to read this and go, wait, he thought she was a prostitute because her face was covered? What does that mean? But I took it a step further for me, just relating as a woman, as a woman of color, as a Black woman, and Black is not a monolith. Everyone has not, every Black person has experienced this depending on where they are. And you may have experienced it, but not know you experienced it because you just didn't realize what was happening. We live in a system and there's some things that occur in our system that, you know, they're there. It's there. Whether you, it's like gravity. Whether you like it or not, gravity exists, you know? But
right.
It was interesting to me. Here's this woman who had to almost make herself invisible to get what she wanted. Make herself not seen. And as a Black woman in America, I feel so many times I have to change the way I, you know, okay, you got code switch. Mm-hmm. I've got a code switch to be, to get what I want, to be noticed, to be, you know, here he's just noticing, oh, this looks, probably he noticed something there and he went to it. And I thought, here's this woman who had to become something else in order to get what was rightfully hers. And I just thought, again, this is connecting the principles and the things we see in the Bible to our contemporary lives today. It does. The Bible is alive. It is active. It can be. We can use it for our modern day use. But I thought, absolutely, this, how I experienced this with Tamar when I read it this time, I thought, I never realized this. But at this stage in my life, I get it because of this, the just the things I've been through where I've had to mold myself into something else at different points and realizing, no, I didn't have to. I didn't have to. But if I wanted what I wanted to move forward, I needed to.
Right. Got to play the game.
I had to play this game. And it's not unique to me. It's not unique to many marginalized women in society and many women in society. You've got to play the game in corporate. You've got to play the game, you know, at your whatever positions you're in, especially when you're in a field that's predominantly men. But I just thought, I don't think I ever saw this about Tamar, that she had to become something and someone else and take major risks that put her in a place of being called, you know, being killed, really.
Right.
When he found out about her pregnancy, he wanted her killed. But she was smart enough to have taken measures to ensure that that wouldn't happen because she was able to implicate him in the pregnancy, you know? So I just
think, she had proof. You have to receive.
She had proof that it was, and how intelligent. You know, there were no, you know, Ori Povich, you're the daddy. There was no, you know, are you the father? There was none of that. So she had to process that and actually had gotten a few of his personal items left with her so that when he came to confront her, she could say, here, you gave me these.
Right.
And he had, you know, there was no kind of fighting that. It's like, oh, wait, yeah, I did it. You're more righteous than I am. And kudos for him realizing that, right? That what she did, even though it was unconventional, and it was, I don't know how to, you know, it's kind of weird. It's like, this is so messy. What?
Yeah.
You know, pretend to be a prostitute and had sex with your father-in-law so you can fulfill the law of Moses.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't wrap my head around it.
Right.
But I appreciate God putting it in here. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate seeing this woman go, for lack of a better term, by any means necessary, I am going to fulfill this law. I am going to get the rights that I deserve. And I'm not advocating that that's what we do now, obviously. We're not in that culture. So I'm not advocating.
Right.
Okay, hear me. I am not advocating that. But I am saying that for her time, she did it within the bounds of the law. And how often do we want to clearly lose our Christianity and step outside of the bounds of what we're called to spiritually in order to get what we want? in our relationships, in our careers, in our, all of those things. And I certainly felt that. I felt that at a different point. So anyway, that really stuck out for me. And so I just thought I would share that.
Yeah. That's a good point, Sam, about the things that, how that applies to today in many different ways. But the aspect you were talking about specifically, of things that we do, we're trying to cut the corner. You don't want to be maybe all the way righteous in order to do this. I mean, I want to lie here on this application, or we might want to, when you notice certain talking, certain things that are going on in the, oh boy, when I used to work for this orthodontic office, and a lot of the women, it was just like gossip central, boy. And I could see why a lot of women sometimes don't like to work with women because of the cattiness and all that. And but there'd be times where it's like, well, if I want to fit in, if I want to be a part of the group, if I want to be accepted, you know, I should join in. Let me try to get the tea. Let me see who else I can get stuff from. And you want to be a part of that, so that people will like you and accept you and all that. But really having to make those conscious efforts. No, I'm not going to be a part of this. Like, you know, I'm not going to talk about anybody else when we're talking. I'm not going to, you know, like, that's just not me. Or maybe it's the certain hours that you work where you miss fellowship opportunities, or even time with your family, because of, you know, certain things you're trying to chase, when you don't have to, you know. So yeah, I do appreciate that point, how she had to lower herself. This is a side note though, just as someone, you know, with a curious mind, I'm like, how long was this mourning moment? Because as soon as that mourning moment was over for the dad, he's like, all right, let me get this prostitute. It wasn't like, let me get remarried. And maybe he's like, I got some needs. But it's so interesting to me that it's like, well, if this is a prostitute, what does that make the men who sleep with the prostitute? Like, what do they get called?
Yeah, I think because, yeah, it's very interesting. Because remember, you're in a society where it doesn't matter, does it? It really doesn't. And so, again, yeah, it didn't matter. It was the women. Were the, and again, I there's so many questions. I agree, there's so many questions, right, that come to mind, because you're thinking the women who were probably in prostitution were themselves widows or women who never had sons, who had to go to begging or prostitution or something for a livelihood. And those are the things we don't always talk through when we talk about things spiritually. And I think if we would really take the time to look at the women in the Bible and to really look beyond sometimes what's being said, listen for what's not being said, and step into their shoes, we would really be so much more, we would be bigger advocates for the marginalized. We would be bigger advocates for those who are being sex trafficked. If it happened then, it's happening now. And so again, right, those contemporary issues are not, they're not so separate from what was happening back then. And I think as women, right, I read this quote recently. I don't remember who said it, but it was said that basically men make the decisions. And when they were saying it, they were saying, oh, it was from my big fat Greek wedding. My big fat Greek wedding, where the daughter had this conventional, she wanted to break tradition or something like that in her marriage, in getting married and everything. And the father was very clear about tradition and the headstrong about it. And the mother was like, you're going to do what your father said. But then the mother said to her, but I'm the neck. Your father's the head, but I'm the neck. And the head turned her this neck. You know, and I just thought, wow, what a great line, right? In the night.
Yes.
I was like, oh, that's good. As you know, I've had some thoughts about just why many atrocities happened where women could have changed the trajectory of those atrocities if they had just spoken up, you know. And for me, I say it about slavery all the time. It's just how I feel. I think there are many women who were the next and didn't, you know, didn't help steer the guys in the right direction. Anyway, I digress. But I think coming back to Tamar and just thinking about even my struggles that I've experienced systemically and the marginalization. You know, there are things, and it's interesting, right? Sometimes we can look at each other in a room and there's that, you have that thing that Black people do. And anybody who's, you know, somebody says something and you immediately make eye contact because they don't realize what they've said. They don't realize how they've marginalized you in that space.
Mm-hmm.
When I think of Tamar and I think how often did this woman get just overlooked, didn't get noticed. It's obviously society marginalized her, didn't think about her, and I felt like, well, that's just the way it is. And maybe the problem is you.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I can think, did she do this because she just felt like no one is listening? There is no one to talk to. They don't get this. They don't understand. So I'm going to have to take these things. I can't wait for some. No one's coming. No one's coming to save me.
Mm-hmm.
No one's coming to rescue me. But God has set this thing in place for me, this law, and it is there to protect me. And I think kudos for her knowing that that was her protection. Because she still knew God, and the law of God was her protection, which blows me away.
Yeah.
Because her situation is so different from ours, right? As women,
right?
We have all the rights. We can do whatever we want generally in our population. Though there's, you know, obviously there are those systemic things there. But how quickly are we willing to drop God and blame Him and not see the atrocities of man, where she leaned on God? Because she saw the wickedness of man.
Right.
And that
it is true. God gets a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
God gets it every time. I feel like something doesn't go your way, it's God's fault. This is happening, it's God's fault. These atrocities in the world, it's God's fault. And, you know, I'm like, man, goodness, he gets the worst rap ever. It's like when things are going great, it's awesome. And as soon as something takes a turn, it's like it's his fault. And sometimes, well, I mean, I don't think about it often, but when I do, I'm like, I would not want to be a woman in this time period. What in the world?
Mm-hmm.
But to see how, you know, you can't help. That's when you were born. And what are you going to do? You accept those things and how much women had to accept because this is just the way it was. But in your bounds, I love that you use that word. What are you able to do within those bounds? And how do you still come above, you know, rise above? Right. And when you were talking about just, you know, it made me think of like desperate times, sometimes calls for desperate measures when you don't feel heard, when you are overlooked. And then, you know, we can get blamed and be called crazy. But I feel like unless the men were to be able to spend at least one day in the women's shoes back then, that they would kind of see like, wow, look at how much power we have, you know, and how you're like, they're just property, they're whatever, you know, how easily just cast aside, but God really did care for them. And they still had a place and still deserved to be there and have their rights as well.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, Jasmine, where God really cared for them. Because I think that's the thing those listening want. I really hope you're able to hear is that in all of this, this woman, despite the desperate measures that she took, the reason why she wasn't stoned, the reason why she wasn't killed is she did it within the law of God. It reminds me of the woman caught in adultery. In the New Testament, you know, the men come where Jesus is writing on the ground, you know, he drops them right to the ground and they're accusing her. And he basically says to them, you know, you without sin cast the first stone. And then he tells her, where are your accusers? Okay, go and sin no more. And I just, that picture for me, I think that was it, Judah, the father-in-law, you without sin cast the first stone because she stayed within the law of God. the law of Moses, yeah. he was not able to cast a stone. She was actually innocent.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy to me. She was actually innocent and he was guilty.
Yeah.
He couldn't fight it because he was outside of the law of Moses, aside of the law that God had set aside. And I think that is the thing that when we are fighting for, it gets very emotional when I'm thinking about what I am owed, how I am treated, how someone has spoken to me, you know, my neck wants to go, oh no. And realizing, wait, I can assert myself in the face of injustice and I don't have to sacrifice my relationship with God to do that. It is actually my relationship with God. It is actually the scriptures that's going to present me righteous and expose the things that need to be exposed. But that is not what society has always taught us.
Right.
I think so many times, because we're not, as a tribe, I can only speak about my tribe, my church, you know, our family of churches. When there's not a wholeness in our teaching, it makes someone want to, you know, there are times in the past where I felt like, I've got to fight, I've got to stand up, I've got to. And then it becomes me, not realizing, no. Let's go back to God. This is about God. This is about the things that he's put in place. It's not just about me. And I think that's the thing I'm learning this journey of my life. It's that when I am fighting to assert myself in the face of injustice,
maybe
I've got to do it under the umbrella of God's mercy, God's grace, God's justice, and not I am woman, hear me roar, you know, put my fist in the air. People aren't, if they see me, they're not going to see God. Yeah. Forcing them to see the God in it. What's right. What made you laugh?
I'm laughing because as you're talking about like the rah rah, hear me roar, sometimes on that spectrum of feminism, if you will, it just makes me think of that Destiny's Child song, Independent Woman song.
Yeah.
How I just knew so many men who did not like that song. And of course, as a woman, you get it. And it's like, for every song that's out there that talks about men and what I have and how much money I have and my clothes and my women and my houses and all this stuff, and for a woman to just say, I bought my house and my car, and that makes you upset. And so, like, it just tickled me as you were talking. But sometimes it can appear or be realistic that women are have to do that so they can be heard, right? After so many years of oppression and multiple different cultures where you come from, sure, you know, women can get the short end of the stick sometimes, many times. And so you kind of feel like you're speaking up or I need to be heard, and it can come off as aggressive or come off like, whoa, woman, back up. And again, I'm like, man, if you were to be a woman, you know, for a year, let's see how that would work for you or what would happen, what have you. But I don't know, that just tickled me. And my husband now, sometimes he'll use that song if I ask him to take out the trash or something. And he's just joking, but he'll go, I thought you was an independent woman. Take out the trash. Do you know? But it's just
funny.
Something that struck a nerve when songs like that come about, of just, you know, women feeling good and confident and able to take care of themselves. So anywho, I don't want that to go on a separate note. Yeah.
But no, I think it's good that you bring that up, because that is where we get our empowerment from many times. And that is why sometimes it falls flat after a little while, because it's not rooted in the gospel. It's not rooted in God. It's not rooted in him being our protector, that he fights for us. It's not rooted in that. And I know, it's just so interesting to me. I think this is a part of maturity in the faith, right? Because when you're young, you're kind of like, but God is, this has been going on forever and God has allowed it. And we question him versus realizing This is not his plan. Man, God did not create culture. We create culture.
Right.
Man has created culture. God did not create culture. He has used culture as a vehicle.
Yeah.
To get the word and to save and to bring us to him. As we see Tamar, God didn't approve of that culture. He would not have wanted her to do that. That is not his intent. Mm-hmm. That she would have to pretend to be a prostitute and all those things. Culturally, this is where she was. But he did have the law that protected her, that if she stepped outside of the bounds, she had to do something like this, she was still protected.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, to me, is, if that doesn't blow your mind about God's mercy and grace, and if it doesn't blow your mind that that would be one of the women that is highlighted in the genealogy of the son, it just right. It makes me love God all the more and helps me to realize that culture may tell me I'm marginalized. That is not God's plan. And that is not how he created me. And that is not how I am to view myself. And so when I face injustice, I've got to go in with the confidence of, wait, do you know who I am? I'm a daughter of the king. I'm a child of God. Mm-hmm. And I come with all of that, not the weapons that rot and perish and break and all of those different things. Mm-hmm. And so I think Tamar just blows me away with, I think, wrapping my head around, she did this all within the law of Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And she was confident. She was confident that if she did it this way, she would be protected. And I think how many women, when you think about it, single women who are like, I'm going to date someone who doesn't even believe in God. You step so far outside. It's like, I want a child, so I'm going to do it this way. I want a man, so I'm going to do it this way. And we step outside the protection of God. That just the consequences that come of that. Oh, in marriages and divorces, and we step outside the protection of God, and then we turn around and blame him.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's very true.
And I'm not saying this is easy. This is painful. I cannot imagine, right, what our ancestors went through. And I think I used to have this this attitude, like, girl, if I was born back then, you know, get on me, right? No, they did what needed to be done to survive, which is why I am here today. Have you ever heard the poem The Mass by, I don't know if it was by Paul Laurence Dunbar and then redone by Maya Angelou? I'm not sure who wrote it. I think it might have been Paul Laurence Dunbar. I don't remember. But it talks about the mask you wear. And it was very
interesting. Okay.
Mask. And it just talks about the how, you know, you have a big smile, but inside you're crying, you're angry, because of how you're treated as a Maya Angelou did it was just a little girl calling her girl, and that, you know, just the disrespect that you face and the blatant insults and all those things, and then you're kind of like, you laugh while you're crying. And I love that poem because it's so very relatable. I think maybe that's what Tamar was just doing, you know, just doing her duties every day, knowing, watching, I forgot his name, Shamar, the son, the last son, watching him grow up and watching Judah not keep his promise. And maybe she is cleaning and cooking and doing laundry and doing all those things. But she's like, yeah. I'm wearing this mask because I'm going to have to. You know, I can imagine, did she go to God and say, am I okay, God? Am I okay to do that? I don't know. But I think I just put myself in her shoes and think, it is a really upward call for me because I want to fight with my own weapons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to go off. I want to tell people what I, you know, it's almost react. Versus respond to God. That's very, very, very difficult. And I appreciate that about her. She didn't react.
Yeah.
She was very intentional. Very intentional. Because that had to be planned.
Right. Very true. That's what I thought of too, Sam. But I thought she had to pause, think, right? Instead of maybe sometimes those reactions, as you're seeing the third son get older and older, you know, as she is getting older and older, right? It's like, man, going through three sons, those three different, you know, kind of maybe ages, age groups there. But yeah, how she had to think of her faith and her works. I just love that, what it says in James. And just, let's think of this plan. Let me make sure I'm in the bounds and I'm still obeying God here. And I am. I'm going to try this plan to see if this works. Just the thought to take her time to not react, which is so, you know, a response, right? It's a normal response, but something we have to train ourselves so we can respond better and not just in the heat of the moment and just say something or do something that, you know, you're going to have to ask for forgiveness later. So yeah. Let's think it out. So I love that she had to do that, you know, and even to shoot her shot, you know, because what if he just passed her up? You know, she didn't know that, but she had to just take a shot like, hey, I have this plan. Here's plan A. This is what I'm going to do. And I'm pretty sure she probably had a plan B. You know, if this doesn't work out, to just kind of be resourceful. Let me use what I have and again, in the bounds of the law. So I really love that and hope that, you know, it is inspiring for me. If I had come to some type of crossroads or something in the bounds, I still want to obey the Bible, right? I want to be a God-fearing woman. What can I do here? What am I going to choose to do? And to do it in faith. And look what happened.
Yeah. You know, it's the shrewdness and innocence, right? She was shrewd yet innocent, which is very interesting to me. You know, I let me ask you a question. How many?
Yeah.
I am ashamed to say this for me, right? Because as I was listening and reading and praying about Tamar and really look deeper into that, you know, that very short blip in the Bible about her. I was, you know, there's a part of me that felt like, wow, I've glossed over this woman for years, for all of my Christian life, really. I knew this happened until this stage in my life where I am. I hadn't really found the connection with her. And I think it really starts with me getting connected to me as a woman, but seeing myself as a whole, right? And not different parts of me, and really being able to connect with her. And I thought, you know, I don't think in all my years of being a Christian and being in the ministry, I have ever read a book by a female, a Black female theologian. And I have never had anyone suggest a book.
Yeah.
By a Black female theologian. And what I found when I started researching a lot of those books is because they can't talk about theology without talking about race. And I thought, this is another disservice. Because I could think maybe nobody spoke about what was happening with Tamar.
Yeah.
I just walked around her and she was internalizing this stuff. And maybe sometimes not even aware the depth of, I mean, obviously aware because of society, right? But there's maybe a part of her that it was the daily kind of like, this is just how it is. Not even, I don't know where it came to the point of what made her think, let me act like a prostitute. Is it because she walked by that city gate and noticed other prostitutes there? Is it because she knew his habit? That when he went to see his friend, he would look for a prostitute along the road. She knew, you know, all of those different things. And I think I totally lost my train of thought here, what I was trying to say. But I think part of it for me was, I don't think this happened overnight for her. I think there was a process of really thinking, praying, introspection, all of that. And I think for me, one of the things, the way I connected that with Tamar is my own introspection. My own thinking is like, why didn't I think of that before? Why haven't I read these things before? Why haven't I?
Yeah.
What is it? Is it because I felt like I was going to be going outside of the bounds of God to do that? Or did I realize I can do that within the bounds of God? That I don't have to believe the lie that there, you can't have justice. You can't talk about justice and faith in the same sentence, because okay. This really is what it was with Tamar. This was justice and this was faith.
Yeah.
And it was messy. God was glorified. And so in a roundabout way, hopefully what I said made it clear. But I think that I'm almost doing this with you guys, listening, processing.
Yeah.
You know, while speaking, I think those are some of the, I thought, whoa. That is a true definition here. There was justice and there was faith. And God was glorified in it. And everyone, the response brought everyone to God, not further away from God. It brought Judah to God. It brought her closer to God. It was like Judah, you this horrible, terrible, which, you know, he was not. He neglected her. It's true.
Yeah.
But the focus wasn't on him at the end. It was on God, really.
Evie.
The love. I literally can't. Can you imagine our Western theology without C.S. Lewis or Martin Luther, John Calvin? You know, you can't. And I just, as I was listening and thinking through Tamar and her story and how much I miss there, and you know where I haven't gone beyond and really found, I think I mentioned earlier about Black theologians, specifically Black female theologians, I started looking some up because I thought, whoa, how did I miss that? Have I not listened or paid attention? This is important. Right. And so I found, interestingly enough, I actually visited the Mary McLeod Bethune-Cookman College in Daytona years ago. Okay. And I thought, here was a woman who stepped out and did something great and had a school for girls, African-American girls specifically, and it was really bolstered by her Christian faith and what needed to be done there. And I think there's a quote by her that says, any idea that keeps anybody out is too small for this age. Open your heart and let everybody in. And I thought, and then I found this other woman, Joanne Marie Terrell. She's a native of Springfield, Mass. I have never heard of her. Around the corner. And she actually serves as a professor of theology and ethics at the Arts of Chicago. But she wrote a book called Power in the Blood, The Cross in the African American and the African American Experience. And I thought,
wow.
Okay, I want to read this. I want to learn. Like Tamar did, I want to learn how to do justice and faith all under the umbrella of God's grace. And I think that encapsulates Tamar for me, a woman who was definitely wronged, neglected, marginalized, all of that, was able to do justice and faith.
Yeah.
So.
This has been great because I have not really heard too much on Tamar, honestly. And just very little, but I love that we went in depth today, and it definitely makes me, when we talked about earlier about that whole victim mindset, all the things that were against her, right, in that mm-hmm. culture, and how she worked it, and to still be in, you know, that bloodline of Jesus, like she's a part of that lineage, you know, it's amazing and it's beautiful. So thank you, mm-hmm. Sam, for putting this together and to go over these women and their story. So I appreciate that. So do you have any other things to say before we say adios?
I have a million things to say, but none I can say right now. So it will be adios for me. I love this way too much.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you, ladies, for listening. We appreciate your support. We hope that you find encouragement, find strength, and inspiration through these women's lives and their relationships with God, that that'll inspire us to keep moving, to keep pushing. So please visit us at www.unpresentablepartspod.com and leave comments, suggestions, and thank you for your time. Bye.
Bye.